is Henrik Palmgren. A warm welcome to all our listeners from around the world. It is December and it is certainly cold up here in Sweden. I hope that you're comfortable wherever you are. And today we have author and investigative mythologist William Henry back with us on the program. It's been about 3 years to the day almost since we had William with us the last time. Far too long, if you ask me. If you're familiar with his work, you know that he's been doing a lot of research around the Stargate mythology. He's been busy in the fields of lost secrets, mystical symbols, and forbidden knowledge. His website is williamhenry.net. You can go there to find out more about his work and research and material. A little bit later in the program, I want to talk about some of his new DVDs, The American Rite and Freedom's Gate, Decoding the Secret of America's Temple of Ascension. But I primarily invited William to talk about something that has been unfolding here in the north in the last couple of weeks. First, in Copenhagen, of course, this is still ongoing as we speak, COP15, the United Nations Climate Change Conference, and basically their plans to bring in a world government, if you ask some researchers out there. William wrote a very interesting article about this called Warning, the Apotheosis is at Hand. William also ties this in with a symbolic interpretation of the COP15 logo from a kind of Christian Gnostic point of view. But the story has also a very interesting extension as well. Shortly after, we had a phenomenon that is now being called or dubbed the Norway Spiral. This happened around December 8th or 9th, I think, and it's been described as a wormhole or a portal, almost a projection that seems to be opening up. This happened way up north in Norway in Tromsø. Was this a test of Project Bluebeam? Was it HARP? Or is it just what the official sources claim, a failed test of a Russian Bulava ballistic missile? This is what the Russian military now also says, but again, just keep in mind that the Russian military might have claimed responsibility for this anomaly just to quiet the inquisitive minds out there. This could have been requested by intergovernmental military forces simply to ask the Russian military to take responsibility for this. But we're going to talk about this and much more today with our guest, William Henry. So with that, welcome back to Red Ice Radio, William, and thank you for coming on the program again.
Thank you for having me, Henrik. I'm really thrilled to be here.
Excellent. It's very good to have you here, and it's been 3 years, but again, so much has been going on, not only your own research, but then we have these last couple of events that have been taking place here in the last couple of weeks, and as soon as I saw the article that you put up, I definitely wanted to talk more with you about it. Right now, it seems that the negotiations on the surface are kind of falling apart in Copenhagen at the COP15. Some people even claim that this is happening because it's designed to fail, to get actually people demanding more and quicker, not only to next year's summit. But share a little bit with us, William, from your perspective in regards to COP15 and what you wrote about in terms of the apotheosis, William.
I'll be happy to. Thank you. I normally, as I say in my article, Warning, the Apotheosis is at Hand, World Government is Here, I don't tend to write about New World Order, end of the world type topics. I had spent the weekend before that in Tempe, Arizona, lecturing with Dr. Stephen Greer, Richard C. Hoagland, and David Wilcock. And I guess I was kind of in that sort of frame of mind when I got home. And that's when I heard about this this lecture, this presentation given by Lord Christopher Monckton. He had done this in Minnesota back in October, and I just didn't appear on my radar until this weekend after this lecture. And in this lecture, Lord Monckton gave a very chilling warning of the advent of world government, and he used what I thought was a very out-of-place word. It immediately caught my attention. He said, "The apotheosis is at hand." Now, I've spent the past year and a half writing a book called Freedom's Gate about the lost symbols in the United States Capitol, in particularly focusing on the painting in the dome of the Capitol, which is called The Apotheosis of George Washington. So I've become a bit of an expert on apotheosis, which always refers to ascension, rapture, transformation, deification, glorification. And so when I hear Lord Christopher Monckton saying, "The apotheosis is at hand, world government is here," I'm saying, wait a minute, time out. What are you saying? Are you using that word properly, or are you, as I sort of interpret it, again, through the lens of Wilcox, Coughlin, and Greer, that this is an insider, if you will, telling us what's going down, that the apotheosis is here, and we need to really pay attention. So I started digging into Lord Monckton's speech and looking at this idea that perhaps the climate change conference in Copenhagen had more to do with the installation of a surreptitious almost installation of a world government than it had really to do with climate change. And so as I discussed in the article, if world government is here, and Lord Monckton is saying that the time is now for that, then is it possible, if you subscribe to Christian prophecy, and I'm certainly a researcher of that, is it possible if the New World Order is here, then is the so-called Antichrist who runs that world government and us, is that figure also here? And if that figure is here, what about those two witnesses that appear 1,260 days before the advent or arrival of the messianic figure and are there to give the Antichrist a hard time, but more importantly, to open the door for this messianic figure? And as I advanced further in my article, I brought forward some of my collection of images that show these two witnesses. They're believed to be Moses and Elijah, and they're portrayed in Christian art standing on either side of an open gateway that, to my eyes and for years, has resembled what we today think of as a stargate or a wormhole. It's beautiful concentric rings that Jesus is portrayed standing in front of, and in other instances, he's actually shown traveling through that gateway, perhaps to other realms. And so I left it at that. And I said in this article, well, if apotheosis is at hand, maybe we want to start looking for a wormhole to open sometime in the near future. And what do we know? 9 days later, on top of the Copenhagen conference, in a day before the arrival of President Barack Obama, a wormhole, a figurative, what a lot of people around the world interpreted as a wormhole, did open in human global consciousness, and it was virtually similar to the concentric rings that we see in these transfiguration images of Jesus. And so I'm left thinking, okay, I guess I called that one. I'm not calling myself a prophet, but it sure seems as if I somehow anticipated what was going to be happening at these events, and I had no idea at the time that that's what was going to happen.
So to you, does it matter if it was a failed Russian missile or not? Is this more about, do you think it's more about the way the human beings, that we interpret this in our consciousness, so to speak, in terms of the fact that this is what we witness? We witness this spiral almost opening, and on certain videos that was captured, you can almost see the middle opening up as well, very quickly, apparently, like a black hole.
Exactly.
To me, it looks very strange if that indeed is the exhaust or fumes or something like that from a rocket. What do you think, William?
Well, I agree. And on your first point, I think it's absolutely phenomenal that we live now in a world, a quickened world, where millions of people can agree, yeah, a wormhole opened in the skies over Earth. Now, part of the problem with that is that one of the reactions to that was, yeah, hey, a wormhole opened over in the skies of Earth today. Hey, what's for dinner? You know, I mean, in the world press, it was like, oh, you know, this can't be, and a lot of people dismiss it. But the point is that we are now at a place where people would accept such a thing, Henrik. Imagine that. That, I mean, we have physicists like Dr. Michio Kaku saying we're a million years away from being able to open a wormhole. And I don't believe that, but let's just say that he's right, that we're a million years away from that. Well, then that would suggest that wasn't us opening that wormhole. It was somebody else. But I can't prove that it was a wormhole that opened there, just like we can't absolutely prove it was an out-of-control Russian missile that is responsible for this phenomena. I mean, Russia is saying, yes, we launched that missile, but they're not taking direct credit for the phenomena that resulted, the light effect. So we're left to wonder what exactly happened here. And so I have spent the intervening time trying to, like everybody else, figure out what was this? Was it HARP? Was it Project Bluebeam? What are we actually dealing with here? And the best advice that I'm getting, and I'm talking with some science advisors and reporters that your listeners would be familiar with, and they have written back to me saying the conclusion is that whatever the phenomena was over northern Norway, it seems truly mysterious and is still unexplained. They don't believe it's HARP. They don't believe it's an out-of-control Russian missile. It's something else. Mm. What is it? I don't know.
What about the idea that it's a projection? To me, it looked like it almost came from behind the mountain area, and it looked like someone's adjusting the lens or something like that. If it's if it is human created, if we put it that way, and it's not a failed missile, what would be the point of that? Do you think is it a symbolic message here to send to the world, or why try it so high up in the north, where actually very few people hang around? Now, we have plenty of eyewitnesses, and people captured it on cell phone, video, and whatnot. But what's your take on that, William?
Well, then you would, well, first, if it is a projection, you would need some kind of a projector. And it is thought that HARP, and there is the HARP facility nearby there, that the HARP technology, that Tesla technology, if its output is amped up, would conceivably be able to do something like this. Why would somebody send what has been described as a bat signal on that day? Is it, for example, because it was one day before the arrival of President Barack Obama in Oslo to claim the Nobel Peace Prize? And isn't it fascinating that Obama's logo, his carefully designed logo with the white hot sun surrounded by the blue sky, is in a way strikingly similar to the Norway spiral? Mm. Was it a message intended for President Obama? There's that school of thought. So, but maybe there's a whole nother script that is being played out here that we're not aware of. And that's kind of what I'm trying to get at, is that if we look at this from this perspective of the legend or the prophecy of the return of the two witnesses, we are looking then for some kind of a wormhole. And we're wondering, if that was a wormhole, then did somebody come out of it, or did maybe somebody go into it? I can't answer that question. I'm just trying to look at this and say, well, what are some of the possibilities for what's happened? Because none of the scientific explanations so far, we haven't been able to reach a consensus on that to explain it. So it's still, as I said, an unexplained phenomenon.
Indeed. And so what do you think Obama has to do with this overall? Does this mean that the leader, so to speak, of this new era that this might be signaling, is that Obama then? And does that mean that he's the savior or the deceiver, William?
Well, exactly. And here in the U.S., I pay some attention to this. There's been no question that throughout his campaign in 2008, and to a lesser extent in his presidency, President Obama's handlers have tried to present him as a messianic figure. I mean, getting back to his logo, his 2008 campaign logo that went just viral, literally worldwide. I mean, that symbol is Obama. It symbolizes hope. And when you listen to the words of the person who designed that logo, his name is Saul Sender. How about that name, Saul Sender? He works in Chicago for a design firm that worked for the Obama campaign. And he explicitly says that white sun in Obama's logo, which is an alchemical symbol for the new day, does symbolize a new day, a new dawn. So they are, in their symbolism, trying to play on sort of the messianic harp strings here. And when you read the accounts of Obama in Copenhagen, another kind of interesting character that comes into play there is the actor Will Smith. After Obama accepts the Nobel Peace Prize, Will Smith is one of the first people to shake his hand. Will Smith interviews Obama after the event. And when you look at that from the sort of the hypertext perspective, you're saying, okay, Will Smith, what does he represent? Well, obviously, Will Smith has been in some pretty interesting movies like Independence Day, movies like I, Robot, movies like, we can go on and on. And you start to recognize that this is an interesting character here, Will Smith, to be, of all people, there with Obama. And then you look at some of the statements by Will Smith where he almost seems to be kind of witnessing to Obama. He said recently that Barack Obama was an idea, that and he represents an evolutionary flashpoint for humanity. What does that mean?
What does that mean? Yeah.
You know, and that he's a symbol for hope. Well, we all know that. And so what I'm saying here is it's like, well, okay, if we're playing on this whole messianic symbolism thing here, do those sort of in the know, are they following sort of my thought processes on this and saying that if we're talking about the appearance of a messianic figure in this age, we are going to tie that into the concept of the Stargate or the wormhole. And lo and behold, that's exactly what we see here. And then when you go into Obama's speech at Oslo, at the first part of it, he's essentially saying war is cool. You know, the way we can achieve peace is through war. So he's bought into that scenario now. And people in the U.S., some of the conservative types, the Bush era folks were very pleased with that because that's their concept. The way to achieve world peace is through war, which is a little bit of doublespeak there, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But then after that, Obama kind of settles down, and several of the commentators I read that remarked about Obama's speech said clearly that Obama is playing the philosopher prince when he's in Oslo. Not only is he expressing this newfound view that the way to peace is through war, but then after that, he gets into some statements where he's riffing on more like the Prince of Peace. He starts talking about the law of love. And this is something that I talked about extensively, like in my presentation, Morph and Revelation 2012, saying that the only way that we're going to be able to transform ourselves into beings capable of traveling through a stargate or a wormhole, I believe, is to become perfected beings, to perfect ourselves, to achieve our light body status, to become beings of light and love. That's it in a nutshell. Well, what does Obama say? He says that adhering to the law of love has always been the core struggle of human nature, for we are fallible. We make mistakes and fall victim to the temptations of pride and power and sometimes evil, he says. Then he says, even those of us with the best intentions will at times fail to right the wrongs before us. And then in the next breath, he says, but we do not have to think that human nature is perfect for us to still believe that the human condition can be perfected. And so here he's talking, this is Illuminati speak. I mean, this is what the Illuminati were called, the perfecti, the perfectibilis. They were all about this idea that we can perfect ourselves, we can transform ourselves. And so as I'm reading this, I'm thinking, does Obama really believe this? Has he deeply researched these Gnostic concepts to know what he's really talking about here? Or has somebody put these words in his mouth and he's playing on this stage here where we've got all this amazing symbolism going on in the skies and we've got this potential new world order trying to gel in Copenhagen and it's all coming together and you're just wondering, okay, what's really going on here?
What is really going on? I mean, again, from my point of view, he is a messenger in that sense, obviously, meaning that he carries the message for someone and someone else. And the question is, of course, is he a false messiah in your view, William, or do you take that stance at all, or do you more witness this from the symbolic point of view again, that someone is trying to put this message out there, but then it's depending on who is witnessing that message and what their interpretation
right.
is. Tell us about that.
Well, that's a very good question, and my answer would be, is Obama a false messiah? If that's the question, my answer is we're going to have to wait and see. And my second part of the answer would be, well, if you're following my take on this, that during this so-called second coming event, we're looking for two witnesses and we're looking for a wormhole. Well, I could easily sit here and say, Heinrich, okay, the two witnesses, well, that's obviously Barack Obama and Will Smith. Mm. I'm not saying that, though. Okay, but that's a thought. But let's just say that the sense that I have about this is following the right trail. And I think that because this wormhole showed up, it could be an indication that I am following the right path. And I'm inviting everybody else to kind of explore it with me. I'm not saying I have all the answers. But in my thinking about this, when you go back to Jewish legend, the Messiah has an actual to-do list, according to Jewish legend. the Messiah is to get the Ark of the Covenant, get the Holy Grail, get the flask of anointing oil, get the Omer of manna. And these are all things your listeners, I'm sure, are familiar with. You're talking about, now we're talking about Lawrence Gardner and manna and white powder. We're talking about the Holy Grail. We're talking about the Ark of the Covenant. Mm. He's also to get the rod of righteousness. And this is something that has intrigued me because, of course, Moses carried a rod or a staff, which he used to perform miracles. And in early Christian art, Jesus is also portrayed with a rod or wand that he used to perform all his miracles. But in addition to that, there are two other things, or several other things, actually, that the Messiah has on his to-do list or her to-do list. And I don't personally see Barack Obama doing any of them right now. And so that, to me, is the key thing. Now, I'll start to get excited if Obama starts to start talking about, well, we're going to bring the Ark of the Covenant out, we're going to get the Holy Grail, we're going to get the flask of manna, get the anointing oil and the rod of righteousness, and we're going to put this kit together. But let me introduce another bit of my research that also has me kind of wondering what in the world is going on. Mm-hmm. And this has to do with an article that I wrote about what's happening at CERN, also in your neighborhood over there, or a lot closer to your neighborhood than mine anyway.
That's true, yeah, yep.
At CERN, just the day before, we see this incredible, quote-unquote, wormhole in the skies above Norway, is when the Large Hadron Collider at CERN, which is in a quest to discover the God particle, had considerably amped up its energy and is en route to really being able to fulfill the ultimate purpose of this machine, which is to discover the God particle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, what's interesting about this is that when I visited CERN a couple of years ago, they were still giving open tours, and you could actually take the elevator 300 feet down beneath the Earth into that huge cathedral-sized room where the Atlas detector was held and is still held. And when I got off the elevator, I was greeted by a sign that just really knocked my socks off. The sign said that they were recreating the conditions that existed just after the Big Bang.
Mm.
Now, that might sound innocuous on the front. I mean, it's actually, you know, it's a huge and ambitious goal of science, is to recreate these conditions that existed just after the Big Bang. But another thing on the to-do list of this messianic figure is to reveal the light that shone before the first week of creation. Now, I've got that ringing in my head, reveal the light that shone before the first week of creation. Isn't that the same moment that they're shooting for at CERN? Recreate the conditions just a nanosecond, like millions of a nanosecond, some crazy small amount of time, just after the Big Bang. Isn't that the time just before the first week of creation? And I'm looking at that going, that's the same time period. And that's on the messianic to-do list. And so I'm looking at this thinking, wow, there's an interesting confluence of things that are happening here. And I think there's a much bigger script. There's a much bigger picture that is trying to emerge, and that's what we're trying to get a handle on right here. It's that old, the proverbial elephant in the living room kind of story, where you've got people over here feeling the ear and saying, yep, okay, the Norway light's definitely caused by HARP. You got somebody else over here saying, no, it's definitely an out-of-control missile. You got somebody else over here saying, it's some kind of an ET message. We're all feeling the same elephant, but we haven't put the whole elephant together yet, and that's what we're trying to do.
Some people have even interpreted the CERN logo into the 666 symbol as well, William. Have you heard about that?
I have heard about that. I find that highly intriguing. I think it's pretty valid. The connection that I made, and this is in an article called Discerning the God Particle, Scientists Build Stargate Device, Open a Black Hole, and Fulfill Messianic Prophecy. It's on my site, williamhenry.net. The connection that I made has to do with the Maya 2012 prophecy. One of the things the Maya describe is that from out of the center of the galaxy is going to emerge something they call the serpent rope. And riding upon this serpent rope is an enlightened being or a group of enlightened beings. Well, I got excited about that because my friend and colleague, John Major Jenkins, in his book, Maya Cosmogenesis, said that he feels pretty sure or confident that we can take out the archaic Mayan term serpent rope and put in the word wormhole, and you have what the Mayans are saying is going to happen in 2012. A wormhole is going to open sometime during this time period, and from out of it will emerge this messianic figure. Well, what I did in this article, Henrik, is looked at the way the Maya symbolized the center of our Milky Way galaxy, the place out of which this serpent rope slash wormhole emerges. They portray it as an eight-spoked wheel with concentric rings in the center. Well, all I did is take the eight-spoked wheel of the Maya symbolism and matched it right beside the eight-rayed or spoked Atlas detector at CERN, and guess what?
What?
They're a perfect match.
How about that?
They're a match. And so now what happens after that? Well, this is when all of a sudden you get these scientists saying, hey, now, wait a minute, CERN, that's nothing but a time travel machine. They're building a Stargate at CERN. And you've got one of their physicists that I saw on 60 Minutes with Steve Kropp saying that what is conceivable there is that they're actually building a teleportation device. So I'm thinking, okay, so we're looking for a transportation system to get this Maya Messiah here. Looks like it's a wormhole. What's going on?
What is going on? That, again, that blue light that came out of the spiral in Norway, one can even interpret that as the kind of rope. And I guess the question here becomes, from a scientific point of view, do you know if CERN, if the effect of that, so to speak, could pop up in other places around the world, in this case, potentially Norway then?
The answer that as best that I've been able to ascertain in my research online is current thinking says no, but I think we have to get out of the box on this and say, well, I mean, it is possible. I mean, it just seems as if these events are interrelated not only by their timing, but also by the potential usage of the device. In other words, it's being bandied about. Is the particle accelerator at CERN some form of a Stargate device? Is it a time travel machine? I mean, remember, just a couple of weeks before it got to this higher energy level, that's when the breadcrumb found its way onto the exterior cooling system. And the explanation that they gave at CERN from the spokesperson was it was a breadcrumb. We think it might have fallen out of an airplane. That's what they said. And I'm like, well, yeah, when was the last time you were in an airplane that had windows that opened?
I heard it was a bird or something that they speculated as well.
They said it was a piece of bread out of an airplane or a bird. Yeah. I mean, so I just went with the airplane because that's utterly ridiculous. And then you get the wacky physicist interpretation saying that maybe there's a force from the future that doesn't want this God particle to be discovered. And so this is what's on the table. And we have to consider that, whether we believe it or not, this is what credentialed people are saying is possible at this place. And so if it's possible that that's what's going on, then in my opinion, yes, it's possible that the increased energies at CERN could somehow have played a role in this strange apparent wormhole opening up over Norway.
They've had massive delays at CERN, just as you said, in terms of the Hadron Atlas, the Hadron Collider and all that, and they've been very eager to get it started. And way back, I remember, in 2007 or 2008, they mentioned that they wanted to have the facility operational within a certain time window, and I just found that interesting, some of those comments made by some of these scientists there. But do you think that this could basically have been a test for the, shall we say, the final opening then in 2012, when they might want to actually open up the portal in its full extent, to actually try to send someone through or something like that?
There is a sense to me that this whole thing, what happened in Norway and all of it, is a test case. Let's just see, will people buy it? Will people buy that it's possible that a wormhole can open in our skies? And the answer to that is yes. There were reports after report of that. Every time you turned around, you looked on Google and you're searching news reports, they're saying, yeah, a Stargate-style wormhole opened up over Norway. And people were going, okay, we can accept that. And so now it seems like, yes, they could be getting ready for the next step. And that's what I'm kind of looking for now is, okay, where might we anticipate that next step? I think that part of the world seems to be a very good candidate for some reason. And what do we do to prepare ourselves for this? Is this something that we need to be concerned about? Or what might we be anticipating is going to happen here? And these are questions I don't have answers for necessarily today, but these are some of the questions that are coming up in my mind that I will be addressing in my research in the coming days.
Mm. You're basically talking about the second coming event overall here. So what are the next steps in this process, William? What are some of the signs, so to speak, that you are looking for then?
Well, definitely evidence that the to-do list is being acted on. In other words, looking for evidence that the Ark of the Covenant Assembly, because this is supposed to be a public event. And so looking for signs that maybe someone has new information about the Ark of the Covenant, the Rod of Righteousness, the anointing oil, all the other basic parts that have to come together here. Let me mention one other item on this to-do list. And by the way, this all comes from Lewis Ginsburg's Legends of the Jews, which is kind of about a 10-volume set of the Legends of the Jews, and it's considered an authoritative source.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, one of the other things on this list that really didn't make a lot of sense to me when I first began researching it back in 1996 was, in addition to getting the Ark and the Rod of Righteousness, the anointing oil, the manna, and so forth, and revealing the light that shone before the first week of creation, there are two other things that I didn't mention that I think could be signs that we want to be paying attention to. This is the answer to your question.
Mm.
One of the other things was level the mountains of the Holy Land, or excuse me, grind the mountains of the Holy Land to powder.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm stumbling on that thinking, what do you mean grind the mountains of the Holy Land to powder? Is this more having to do with the white powder, grinding the white powder, grind the mountains, looking for the alluvial gold, perhaps, in the mountains of the Holy Land to produce this manna-like substance, this white powder gold everybody's so excited about? And then 9/11 happened.
Hmm.
And I started listening to the news announcements. And now, in American mysticism, America is considered the new Atlantis, the new Jerusalem.
From the new Francis Bacon point of view.
Exactly, the new Holy Land.
Yeah.
And on 9/11, two mountains were ground literally to powder. And so the question then becomes, well, how would 9/11, why would destroying the World Trade Center, grinding the buildings of the World Trade Center to powder be on the messianic to-do list? I mean, nobody views that as a positive event. But the answer for me is that just remember what happened a couple of days after 9/11. It seemed as if for one moment the whole world had come together in hope and prayer. And so there was, for a brief moment, a positive aspect of that. And then, of course, the neocons came in and wrecked the whole thing, launched the war on terror, and completely tried to lock down the planet. So you can see there is a battle going on here, and maybe the grinding of the mountains of the Holy Land does have to do with 9/11.
Hmm.
Now, the other thing on the list is this messianic figure will raise Korah in his band of followers from the inner earth. That's what Lewis Ginsburg says. He will raise Korah and his band of followers from the inner earth. Who's Korah? Well, when you start to look into this, people ask, well, this Korah figure is a person of mystery. Who is it? Well, Korah is Moses' cousin. He's considered like the second wealthiest man alive at that time. And what had happened is that Moses started acting all uppity. After he gets the Ten Commandments from Yahweh, he starts acting all uppity, and Korah gets in his face and says, you know, Moses, we'd like you to knock it off. And by the way, all this, what I'm telling you here, is all in the book of Numbers. Korah says to Moses, well, you knock it off. You're acting like a jerk. We just left one Pharaoh. Now you've got these tablets. You're acting like you're, you know, some kind of Pharaoh or something.
Yeah,
stop it.
Right.
And so Moses says to Korah, fine, we'll let Yahweh settle this. And so what happens is Moses tells Korah, meet me at the tabernacle tomorrow. We'll have Yahweh settle it. Well, Yahweh appears in his usual cloud. And next thing we know, Yahweh opens up a hole in the earth, in the inner earth, according to Ginsburg, and Korah and 250 of his followers are put into it. And according to the Jewish legend of the return of the Messiah, the second coming, the Christian second coming, they're still there. They're awaiting this guy to pull them out of what seems to me some kind of static kind of place, like they're in suspended animation mm-hmm. or something. Mm-hmm. And so then the question is, well, who's Korah? I mean, people think Moses is Akhenaten. Okay? Mm-hmm. If we're trying to put historical personage on this, there's a theory that Moses is Akhenaten.
Indeed.
But I'm not sure about that. And the reason why is because Korah's name means the rebel. And at that time, the greatest rebel on the planet was Akhenaten.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's called the Heretic King because he launched this rebellion against the bureaucracy of Egyptian gods. And what I think is that another sign, something else we want to look at is evidence that maybe we find the tomb of Akhenaten, which has been undiscovered. Maybe we start to find evidence that Akhenaten is Korah. And then the next really big thing would be somehow these guys are pulled out of the inner earth. It's a strange sensation. And so when I'm in Egypt, like in the Valley of the Kings, my sense is that this is the place we're talking about, is that maybe, you know, Korah, Akhenaten, and 250 of his followers are parked maybe in another dimension or something somewhere, awaiting a time when they come full force into the world, and that is a validation of who the Messiah is. One other thing that any Messiah wannabe would have to do, according to Jewish legend, is raise from the dead one known to the Jewish elders. Mm. So that's a real tricky one. Mm. So if, you know, and this is what is insulting to me, that if you got some political people trying to push a politician as a Messiah, I'm saying, yeah, well, bring it on, because I really want to see what you do with the Ark of the Covenant. And I really want to see how you pull Korah and his band out of the inner earth. And I want to see you resurrect somebody from the dead, because if you're not about doing those things, don't call yourself or don't even imply that you're a messianic figure, because you're purely a wannabe.
William, what about the, again, we have this interpretation of that all of these things that you mentioned here can be put in a modern context. For instance, when you're talking about awakening someone from the earth or something like this, we could potentially talking about regenerative technology. We could talk about extracting DNA from someone and cloning them or bringing them back to life.
Moses indicated to me, Nostradamus in his quatrains indicated to me that there's some DNA belonging to Moses that's out there somewhere waiting to be found. Mm. So I think you've hit it on the head that would be one way that you could resurrect these beings is through some kind of cloning technology. Absolutely.
So the overarching question here that arises as well is basically about the architects of all of these events that are in some way playing this out in our time period. They're on one hand pushing people's religious hot buttons, as you alluded to before.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is, are they human created, or are we talking about that this is spiritually guided from beyond? Is it true prophecy playing out, or is it human created? What do you think, William?
Well, I think it's so complex that there does seem to be some kind of a higher mind that is operating in these events, or for sure somebody that has the actual playbook or has read the script and has it in front of them and are starting to reveal this. So personally, I think there's a higher mind operating here.
What about if we tie this in a little bit more with in terms of Copenhagen as well, and talk a little bit about the symbolism of not only the logo, but about the way you interpreted this from the Gnostic/Christian point of view. I'm very glad to see that you, among very few so far, has pointed out the logo overall, because the first time I saw it, I was like, ooh, I actually got I was jarred a little bit, and I was very, got actually a very uncomfortable feeling overall from it. It just looks like a, I don't know how to describe it, but it looks very messy, if I can put it that way, and a lot of strings connected, creating a sphere. But share with us your perspective on this, William.
Yeah, in my article, warning the apotheosis is at hand, I included that logo, and I didn't make a comment on it. I just simply said the logo for the climate change conference, and I said, thoughts? Because I didn't want to, I know what my thoughts were, and I wanted people to kind of look at this and get their own personal sense and say, this looks like some kind of a real tight knot here. This looks like some kind of trap.
Yep.
These are some of the comments that started coming back to me. And you're thinking, okay, this is a climate change conference. You would think that they would go along with everybody else and have some kind of warm, fuzzy, green, living kind of logo.
Yeah.
Not these guys. This is ice cold. Could be because it's in Copenhagen and it's December. But I'm just thinking, you have your choice to communicate a message. Your logo, your icon, like Obama's logo that we talked about, should tell us something about you. And what this logo tells me about the Copenhagen conference and this treaty and now what they're calling an agreement is that this is ice cold. This is a trap, and we are going to enfold you in this net or matrix of our making.
I couldn't agree with you more. That's exactly what I felt too. It's like a net, as you say. And the question is, of course, what climate change actually means as well. Because I mean, there's debate right now about the science here, and with not only in regards to the CRU, the hacked emails, and the fact that the science has been skewed. Are they talking about another kind of climate change here? They're talking about this new day, the new era that you mentioned, William. What do you think?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, let's define really what we're talking about here, because they made it clear once the conference was underway that, I mean, that old bait and switch was made it abundantly clear that there was another agenda here, where they had told the third world countries essentially, hey, this conference is about you. In the preliminary negotiations, they're saying, hey, it's time to go back to the U.S. and Europe and China and stick it to them, because they've been abusing the planet, and now it's time for them to pay up, and they're going to pay you. So the third world comes there thinking they've got all the UN support behind them and something finally is going to happen here. And what happens? They pull the switch, and all of a sudden they say, well, no, you're not going to see any of this money. The World Bank is going to control it, not the UN. And there's a whole other agenda here.
Yep.
And it has nothing to do with climate change. And so it's all, you know, we're talking about a political climate change here, but really, ultimately, we're talking about a spiritual climate change here, where it seems they want everybody to be on board or paying a tithe, paying enormous taxes to basically the World Bank. And that's not what people signed up for when they start thinking about climate change.
Exactly. And that's what's worrying to me as well, in terms of we were in Copenhagen here just a few days ago, came back from there, and the consensus, I would say, at this point from people we talked to is that they consider that the leaders aren't doing enough to bring this in. And in one way, as I said a little bit earlier here, is that it almost looks like it's designed to fail too, the agreements and the negotiations, because of the fact that they want more people to rally behind this. And again, the utter lack of questioning of the science is prominent, so to speak. It's where do you see this is going, William? Are you worried about this?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is classic. That's what they did here after 9/11, is they had Americans basically lined up and begging for the government to take away our rights, to protect us.
Yeah.
And the same thing is happening here. They're saying we're not, they're trying to get people to start begging and pleading for more intrusion into our lives and on the IFCOM that this is how we're going to save the planet. And this has nothing to do with saving the planet. The planet is going to go on. The question is humanity going to go on?
Yeah.
And it's going to take individual choices on the part of all of us to be able to choose a different lifestyle in order to bring the planet back into a place that we really want it to be. And we don't need the World Bank being the ones to tell us how to do that. And we don't need a new economy coming into place with these people telling us that the only way that we can live as humans is to live under the yoke of this new so-called New World Order or One World Government.
Absolutely. And some people have even turned it around and said that by restricting the development of the developing countries, this will actually cause people to die. It will actually cause it will instigate rather the depopulation agenda, because people won't be able to get access to you know, water irrigation. There's so many issues that come up under this umbrella in terms of, it seems to me that they are trying to shut down the whole industrial process now, because this is the new baddie, so to speak, on the block here. Are you afraid that this will turn into like a green, you know, fascist dictatorship, William? Are you concerned about that?
I absolutely think that's what's in play here, is a new green fascist dictatorship. And a couple of comments on that. First, I mean, I've been looking at this since around 1996. In my first presentations, I would open up my presentation by citing the UN numbers that tell us that back then there was only 6 million of us. Now there's over 7 billion, excuse me. Back then, the UN was telling us that one half of the world's population does not have a toilet and is 2.5 days' walk from the nearest telephone.
Mm.
And so here we are in the West with every major convenience. We live like King Solomon, but one half of us don't have a toilet and are 2.5 days walk from the nearest telephone. So how can we presume to be going forward with that kind of imbalance in our world? We have to address that. And what the point that I would make then, and I make it again now, is that it seemed to me that, well, I wonder, in some higher realm, perhaps in a star system nearby, are there people looking at our planet saying, wow, you know, there's this planet over here next to this star that is so backward, they don't even have access to transdimensional stargates, and they don't even believe other dimensional beings are real. We got to go in there, and we got to do something about that. We got to lift them up. And so that's what I kind of see as what's in play here, is that we need to lift up those who lack, because there are those even above us that view us as being poor people and backward people. And so we're all trying to kind of work this together. The second point on this green fascist dictatorship is I've been pointing people back to ancient Egypt as an example of a true green civilization. And green to me doesn't have anything to do with driving a Prius or necessarily an economical car or any of that kind of jazz. Recycling is great. Keep doing it. Do all of those things. That's just smart. But that has nothing to do with being green. A true green consciousness and civilization was modeled in ancient Egypt, which was a civilization based on the heart. All of ancient Egyptian religion was about rebirth, renewal, regeneration. Those are green, true green concepts, not recycling, not a fascist dictatorship, not a one world government. And I'm just not seeing true green leadership coming from any of the people in the green business. And hey, I got to tell you, you know, on this note, something, you know, talking about the driving a Prius and that, I've spent some time lately paying attention to automobile ads.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been really surprised when you see like the new GM SUV, they advertise that as a vehicle that will awaken your soul. And then Kia has a new car actually called a Soul, S-O-U-L.
Mm.
Nissan has a commercial with people driving saying you can own the stars with your Nissan. And I'm starting to take offense at this, because they're trying to tell us that if you want to be spiritual, you want to be green, drive a Prius.
Yeah,
I'm like,
exactly.
This has nothing to do with that. And why are you people starting to take over the soul and trying to tell us that your car has anything to do with the soul? I think you people are out of control.
I couldn't agree more. And that's also the sense that we got when we walked around down in Copenhagen. Everything, to my surprise, actually, was corporate sponsored. In one way, I'm not surprised, but I didn't think it would be that obvious. We had Volvo, Deutsche Bank, we had Siemens everywhere, even Heineken and Carlsberg was there, obviously, and things like this. So it's all about the new green economy seems to be all about sponsoring this kind of the cap and trade system, buying and selling carbon units. And when we find out that people like Al Gore and in the extension even General Electrics are behind the companies who sell and buy carbon credits, people have to start asking some questions right there.
I agree. And I'm at this point very sad to say that Al Gore lives in Nashville where I live. It's just one of those things that you just have to ask pointedly. How can you? I don't think he should be able to profit from that. If he wants to be an activist and talk about it, that's one thing. But people have projected that Al Gore could be making billions of dollars in the coming years through his investments and the things in his activities in this so-called green revolution. Yeah, it's green, all right. It's making some people a lot of money.
Very good point, William. Hey, I would love to continue our conversation here with you, William. There's so much more to discuss. I'm going to talk about some of your new work, but there's also some roundup notes I want to talk with you about in terms of environmental problems and also solutions and tying this together with technology and things like that. But William, to wrap things up here for the first segment, please mention some of your work that you have out there available for people and where they can go to check that out.
Okay, well, thank you. The best place to go is my website, which is williamhenry.net. I have several presentations there. My presentation Morph, which is right there on the front page of my site, Morph, The Secret of Light Body Activation, is one of my most popular presentations. It's selling all over the world right now. I'm thrilled to be shipping, especially over to your part of the world. I'm always shipping, it seems, to Norway and Denmark, Sweden, those areas. There's a lot of interest in this, and I'm really thrilled to make friends there. And I also have a new book called Freedom's Gate, The Lost Symbols in the U.S. Capitol, which people are telling me is an ideal companion to Dan Brown's new book. And there's some funny business about that, too, that perhaps we can get into in the next segment. So those are my two most recent projects.
Excellent. Again, the website, williamhenry.net. Go head on over there, check out some of the products there. Okay, we'll take a short break here, William. Stay with us, and we'll continue talking more in our member section in a while. Join us in the second hour with William Henry for a very exciting discussion as we talk more about the symbolism of COP15 and what the message behind the symbolism might be. We also talk more about Stargate symbolism. William has been traveling to a lot of different places around the world to find various monuments and statues depicting Stargates, even at CERN, with the dancing Shiva, the destroyer, outside. The question is, who is putting these up? What is the message? And is this an attempt to bring true enlightenment to the world? And if so, why are people generally seem to be missing the point? We also talk about his new book and DVD, Freedom's Gate, and we go into details about the Capitol Dome in Washington and the apotheosis of George Washington. We talk about the alchemical symbolism, the painter who did this, the sacred geometry encoded into the design. How does this tie into the destiny of America, and is the experiment, the American experiment, ending or just beginning? Keep an eye on redicecreations.com for the premiere of Red Ice TV. We have upcoming episodes on 2012, and after that, interviews and coverage from the ground at COP15. Click into our radio archive and see upcoming guests on Red Ice Radio. But more coming up now with William Henry.